Now, different generations tend to have different defining characteristics over the years, but today's generational divide often feels like it gets more attention. Things like housing, pensions, job security, education, how we vote, the culture we consume, how we use the internet, what we value, can all produce different thoughts depending on your age. Are today's differences between the young and old actually unusual, more so than they've been in the past, or do we just notice them more? Dr. Jean Twenge is professor of psychology at San Diego State University. She researches and writes about generational differences. Her latest book is called iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Jean, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, we focused, Jean, last time you were on the show on your book, but this question of the generation gap, is there a way to measure whether the generation gap is bigger over time or smaller?
Well, we can look at some of the things that you mentioned in terms of how people spend their time and how they're feeling and what they value and how that differs from one generation to the next. So kind of as a general conclusion, there was clearly a pretty big generation gap between the baby boomers, those born mid-1940s to mid-1960s, and their parents, so the Silent Generation and the GI Generation who fought World War II. So definite generational break there, mostly around values, because the baby boomers were really kind of questioning a lot of things about corporate America and about the Vietnam War and about how much we should follow rules versus pursue, you know, your own personal passions. Then since then, there have certainly been generational differences through Gen Xers and millennials, basically a growth of those same attitudes in terms of individualism or focus on the self. And then there was another generational break much more recently between the millennials born in the 80s and early 90s and the generation born after 1995 that I call iGen.
We see the pace of technological change. It feels like, and I think it's true, it gets faster and faster over time. The time from a new big thing becoming obsolete and a new thing taking over for it gets faster. Is that part of what's driving this, what feels like a bigger gap between generations?
It certainly looks that way. So the biggest shifts, and this is mostly teens, so you know, 13 to 19-year-olds roughly, the biggest shifts occur around 2011 or 2012, that is right as the smartphone became common. So around that time, we switched from pretty high levels of happiness and low levels of depression among teens to much more depression, much more unhappiness. It's also around the same time that the amount of time teens started to spend with their friends face-to-face, that had been declining for a while, but not by much, and then it really accelerated right at that time that communication moved onto the smartphone. So technology does seem to have accelerated some of these generational shifts, and that shift was much more sudden than a lot of shifts in the past, which took, you know, a decade or two to roll out. In this case, it was because a smartphone took only 5 years from its introduction to 50% of Americans having one, so it was a really sudden shift.
When I think of the generation gap, I think of a gap in maybe understanding or empathy between generations. You know, kids these days versus old people don't understand, parents don't understand. Do you see that kind of basic understanding gap on the rise? We just don't get each other across generations.
That's certainly possible. We don't have a lot of great data on that because the data I'm drawing from is mostly young people themselves rather than,
sure,
you know, perceptions of older folks. But, you know, there's certainly a lot of concern around technology and young people spending too much time on technology. You know, on the other hand, a lot of older people are concerned about their own technology use as well. So, you know, in some ways, that's a generational universal. But it is certainly true that the way teens are growing up now is so fundamentally different from the way their parents' generation, Gen Xers and boomers, grew up, that there is a real generation gap around, you know, what teenagers are doing with their time, say, you know, looking at their phone as opposed to what Gen Xers like me remember of, you know, going to the mall or going out with your friends, which just isn't as common anymore.
Talking to Jean Twenge, professor of psychology at San Diego State University, author of the book iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. We're talking about the generation gap as it exists today and how it might have changed over time. Gene, let's focus now on this iGen for a few moments. We've spent a lot more time on it in the past. There are, you write in your book, some upsides. They seem to be drinking less, doing fewer drugs. Teen pregnancy is down. All good news. But you do worry, and you were touching on this a little bit, you see some downsides, especially when it comes to our relationships.
Yeah, so I think the biggest downside, in my view, which is very concerning, is this sudden increase in depression and suicide risk factors that began around 2011 or 2012. It has just continued throughout the most recent data. It's now reached levels that are really, really concerning. So one out of five teen girls has had clinical-level depression in the past year. That is very concerning, and that wasn't true just in 2010, just 9 years ago. There's some other trends that are more trade-offs. So one of the biggest generation gaps is that iGen is less likely, say when they're 18, to have a driver's license, to work at a paid job, to go out without their parents, to date, to drink alcohol, to have sex. Some of those are trends that most parents are thrilled about, that fewer teens are having sex and drinking alcohol. But there's also those trends in there which are not clearly good or bad, like being less likely to have a driver's license or a job. And it just points toward iGen taking longer to grow up, which has some real advantages, but it has some downsides too. One of which is their Gen X parents are saying, what do you mean you don't want to have a driver's license? Are you crazy? And that's one of the things parents comment to me, that they're surprised when they see these trends, but then they say, oh, that explains my kid and his friends and why they're so different from what I remember being a teen.
For the clearly negative parts of iGen, especially the increased rates of depression, not strong in-person relationships, what's the therapy? What is the answer to some of those concerns?
You know, I in some ways, this may end up being a good news story, because if these trends can be traced even partially to the overuse of technology, then the solution is very clear. Then we can cut back on our use of technology. And that doesn't mean giving up our phones or tablets or laptops. It just means being more mindful about how we use our leisure time and helping our kids do the same. So what that's going to look like is things such as no phones or tablets in the bedroom after lights out to preserve sleep, because getting enough sleep, very important for mental health and happiness. Not looking at the phone or tablet right before bed so it doesn't interfere with sleep. And just trying to limit the amount of time we spend looking at a screen to 2 hours a day or less, maybe three on an odd day, but for it not to take over all of our leisure time and for that phone not to be in our hand all the time, to preserve time for sleep, for exercise, and for face-to-face social interaction. That, as parents, we have to realize, well, we think, you know, if they're at home alone on their phone in their bedroom, that they're safe. Well, physically, maybe, but it's not great for their mental health. It would actually be better for their mental health, more than likely, if they were out with their friends. Even though that runs the risk of them, you know, getting into trouble, that may be the downside. But that face-to-face social interaction is so crucial for mental health and for developing important social skills.
You mentioned that older generations are latching on to various forms of technology. I know, at least anecdotally, it seems like younger people are seeing Facebook as the preserve of their parents and older generations. We've seen concerns from older people about stress related to too much time online, reports on seniors being susceptible to fake news online. Are you worried about some of the similar effects you see in the youngest generation as older generations embrace this technology, have the same stuff?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely something to think about. What's interesting is, in a recent study, we were able to look at some of these mental health trends around depression and psychological distress and suicide risk factors. And we found that that pronounced increase in those factors after 2011 only appeared among teens and young adults. Adults ages 26 and over didn't really show these trends. I mean, there were a few weak effects, but it wasn't anything close to that clear increase that showed up with younger people. So it could be that older people's social lives are more established, that even though they're spending more time in technology, maybe it's not enough to have really disrupted their social lives. as opposed to younger people where the norm has shifted so much toward electronic communication that they're not getting together with each other face-to-face as much.
Talking to Dr. Jean Twenge, professor of psychology at San Diego State University. She researches and writes about generational differences. Her latest book is called iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. We're talking about the generation gap and different ways of understanding the world between the iGen that she writes about and millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, and beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Whichever generation you are in, tell us about a time when you've noticed generational differences. Maybe it's at the workplace, the family, the school. What do you feel defines your generation, whichever one it is? Are there ways you don't see eye to eye with different generations? Are there things you see the younger generations doing or experiencing that you wish you could have had, or that maybe they think you think they've taken it too far in that direction? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with psychology professor Jean Twenge. Her newest book is called iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. We're talking about the generation gap and whether it's gotten bigger over time. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble understanding another generation that you work with, live with, interact with? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jean, based on your research, do you have thoughts on how maybe, especially with the iGen, how based on what we know about them and each other, how we can get along across generations and kind of make sense of the experiences of each other?
Yeah, you know, I think your point earlier about understanding is just really key, that to just, you know, when you're relating to someone, just realize, you know, their world is very different from the one that you might have experienced growing up. And to try to take another person's perspective, always very helpful, but perhaps especially around generational differences. So even though I'm of the opinion that, you know, being on the phone all the time is not a great thing, still, when I see young people on their phone, I try to remember that that's become the standard, that their friends, it may not even occur to them, hey, let's call each other on the phone or, you know, get together face-to-face, because the norm has shifted so much away from that. If they want to talk to their friends, they may not have any other choice than to be on Instagram or Snapchat or send a text, because they just don't have that standard of let's go get together with people face-to-face.
Let's bring on a caller now. Ellen is with us in Green Bay. Ellen, hello.
Hello. So I myself am a member of iGen, and I found that for those who have depression, they use their phones as a coping mechanism.
How so, Ellen?
So I've heard from some of my friends that when they're feeling more depressed, or they have worse feelings about themselves, they go on their phone and they look at what other people are doing, and they look at other jokes and things online.
Ellen, thanks for the call and for sharing the experiences of your peers. Jean, is that something you saw as you talked with and studied people as part of that generation?
Yeah, if you look at the studies, especially the big studies, they do tend to show that people who spend, especially an excessive amount of time online, so that's going to be 3-4 hours a day or more, they are more likely to be depressed and unhappy. So then the question is, what causes what? And it seems to be, a lot of times it's kind of a vicious cycle, that sometimes you do get the pattern of someone who's depressed will then spend more time online, but then that time online doesn't have the effect that they would like. It doesn't make them happier. It sometimes can, but when it gets to that higher level, you know, the 3 hours, 4 hours a day and beyond, then it doesn't, because it tends to replace activities that would be more beneficial for getting rid of depression or unhappiness, like sleeping or exercise or face-to-face social interaction, because those we know from decades of research are better for mental health. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in a lot of ways that you have both going on. But in a longer time scale, most of the studies that have followed people and longitudinal studies tend to find that it's the screen time that leads to depression rather than the other way around. But you do get both.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Lucas with us in Waukesha now. Lucas, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Lucas?
I'm a teacher in a district in southeastern Wisconsin, and we have technology in the classroom all the time, and I'm in elementary school. And you really see, while it can be super useful for educational purposes, you see how they kind of recede into themselves when they get those iPads in their hands, and how social interaction becomes kind of secondary. I mean, sometimes I worry that we're losing some of those social skills when we're always having an iPad in our hand, or when we're having an iPad in their hand when they could be working with their classmates.
Lucas, thanks a lot for that call. So, Gene, it's not just that personal cell phone. Lucas sees it in, the school's putting iPads and other devices in the kids' hands.
Yeah, that's right. And I see it as a college faculty member as well, that in the classroom people have out their laptop and are kind of hiding behind it and don't talk to their classmates as much as they used to before that was the standard. So it's such a trade-off, and it's such a difficult thing, especially in education, that we, obviously want our students to learn how to use the current technology, and we have so much access to information. I mean, it's such a boon for education in so many ways, yet we have to make sure, again, I think that it's that balance, not using it so much that they're missing out on that face-to-face social interaction. And that's often a very tough balance to strike in a classroom, I agree.
Thanks for the call, Lucas. Terry joins us now in Milwaukee. Terry, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Love your show. I appreciate this topic especially. I was speaking to the person who answered the phone. I was born in 65, and in 1985, I was literally stuck in Poland. I'm first-generation American, and I do not know how we did it, but my dad was here in the United States, and there was no cell phone. There was just, the old-fashioned long-distance call, and I made it back, but man, oh, man. And just even I was saying back in the day, meeting at Summerfest, you don't make it to the water tower by 10 o'clock, you're gone. You're not going to wait any longer. And I'm also an early childhood special ed teacher, and I call my group time old school carpet time. We do not use the smart board at that time. I put in a CD. We all look at each other and we sing. They absolutely love it.
Terry, thanks a lot for that call. Okay, I like that. The carpet group singing time, Gene, a way to have that face-to-face interaction.
Yeah, and, there's a lot of worries right now about preschoolers and toddlers spending so much time with tablets, because that wasn't the case even 5 years ago. It wasn't as common. And I hear from a lot of kindergarten teachers and preschool teachers that kids are almost starving for that face-to-face social interaction. So it's wonderful to hear that being incorporated very purposely into the school day.
And also, Terry mentioned the meetup. I mean, in some ways, I'll say in my life, the cell phone makes it easier, especially when you're in another city and trying to meet up with people. It's easier to pull off that difficult logistical act of being in the same place at the same time. Can we harness this in a way that is socially positive and brings us together?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the irony, isn't it? That you could completely see it going the other way. Now that we have smartphones, maybe it should be easier for us to coordinate meeting up face-to-face. And that, at least for young people, has not been the direction that it's gone. But I think that shows that question of balance again, that it's not the technology, it's how we use the technology, and that we can use it to facilitate get-togethers and other things that are great and convenient and wonderful. It's when staring at the screen replaces these things that we run into trouble.
Thanks for the call, Terry. We'll go now to Marie with us in Jefferson. Marie, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a speech therapist, and I've noticed that I feel like kind of piggybacking off of the woman that spoke before that, you see a lot of young kids, even in grocery carts, that are looking at iPads, and instead of having that interaction and being able to look at facial expressions and talk about what you're seeing in the grocery store. It's more of sitting still, looking at the iPad, not having any of that back and forth language, and it's really affecting kids' ability to express themselves even at a young age now.
Marie, thanks for that call. So, Jean, it's not necessarily the teens here. It's the parents parenting based on these devices. In our last minute or so, leave us with some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so that I think is the worry for even the post-iGen generation is what's going to happen to those language skills. And again, that's something I hear a lot from people who work with young kids, that they are afraid, first, that kids aren't going to develop the language skills, and second, that they won't develop the self-control to go out to a restaurant without the tablet in front of their faces. So that's the next generation, the next worry.
Marie, thanks for that call. And Jean, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Jean Twenge is a professor of psychology at San Diego State University. She researches and writes about generational differences. Her latest book is iGen, Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. She joined us to talk about today's generation gap.